The rights of transgender people do not seem to stay out of the news for long, especially when we're talking about how schools treat transgender students. The federal government gave guidance to school districts last year. In essence, let students use the facilities that correspond to their gender identity. That went to court. And then recently, the Trump administration rescinded the guidance from last year. So what do schools do to accommodate the transgender students? Both Oregon and California have approaches that are very clear. Let's get into the details of those approaches. We have one guest from each of the state education departments. Robert Oakes is the spokesperson for the California Department of Education. Robert, thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
And Cindy Hunt is with us as well. She's the Government and Legal Affairs Manager at the Oregon Department of Education. Hi, Cindy.
Good morning, Jeff.
So both states already had either laws or regulations in place addressing the rights of transgender students. California went first a couple of years ago. Robert, tell us what governs the situation there.
Sure, and thanks again for inviting us. I know there's probably a lot of snow up in the Siskiyou, so I hope everybody's getting around okay. So first of all, in California, 4 years ago, the legislature passed and our Governor Brown, signed into law protection for transgender students at all our public schools. Says that simply they can use the restroom based on the gender they identify with and the locker room based on the gender they identify with. That remains the law in California. We were pleased to see President Obama spread the word last year. We were disappointed with President Trump's actions, but the law remains the law in California. Transgender students are protected here.
And the law, is that AB 1266?
That is at AB 1266 by then Assemblymember Tom Amiano from San Francisco, who was a champion of LGBT rights in our state.
Now, I notice your boss, the state superintendent, Tom Torlakson, reiterated the rights under state law in a release on February 22nd. I mean, the first sentence of the release mentions restrooms and locker rooms. I mean, is that the primary focus of treatment of transgender students?
That's the primary question we get. The primary focus is making all students feel safe and protected at school. California has a long history, as the great state of Oregon does, of protecting people from discrimination, particularly students from bullying and harassment. And our message is we want you to feel safe at school. We want parents to be fully engaged at school. We want kids to be safe. Specifically, they are entitled to these rights under state law. Tom has a long career as a legislator here in California. He's been superintendent for 7 years, but he started as a classroom teacher, and he knows that kids, if they feel unsafe, if they feel bullied, will not be able to succeed in school. Our message is you come to school in California, regardless of your gender identity, you are safe.
So now, Cindy, let's turn to Oregon. Cindy Hunt, again, is with the Oregon Department of Education, Government and Legal Affairs Manager. Oregon put its guidance in a memo out last May. What was the gist of that?
Yeah, the gist of that guidance was basically summarizing the federal and state law that applies to individuals who are transgender, but also other children who may have been facing discrimination based on sexual orientation, race, color, or religion. Many of the laws that we cited to in that guidance were federally based, but many of them were also state-based. Like California, we've had an anti-discrimination law in place actually since 2007, and our anti-discrimination law covers students based on gender identity as well, and so that was one of the state laws that we cited to in the guidance. But we also, like California, cited to our anti-harassment and bullying laws, which specifically call out special attention for harassment and bullying based on gender identity and sexual orientation. And we also cited to laws that are much older, such things as every student in Oregon has a right to a free and appropriate public education, and that includes transgender students. So we cited to both federal and state laws. The reason we issued the guidance when we did is we were getting a lot of questions from school districts and also parents and kids. And so we felt that it was time to put all of these laws in one place so that folks had a resource, really, when they were facing these issues in their local district.
So the guidance to school districts, and that is what it's called, guidance to school districts, creating a safe and supportive school environment for transgender students, was really meant to collect all the stuff that applies in one place?
That's correct, because we were getting questions, you know, that were really specific to, like, small school districts in Oregon, for example, that up until that point, they had not known that they had a student who was identifying as transgender, and then suddenly they had a student or a student's parent coming to them, and they really needed guidance on how to handle the situation. So our guidance not only included laws, but it also included information about things like terminology and how to face, you know, such basic questions as, you know, which pronoun to use. These are the kinds of questions that we were getting. So it wasn't just focused on the law.
I noticed the terminology. I brought the definitions section into the room with me, and it's fairly long, and it looks like there are terms here that have been added to in recent years. Are they addressed directly in that anti-discrimination law from 2007 you were just talking about?
Right. They were not. In the 2007 law, it included students based on, or discrimination rather, based on gender identity. But many of these terms were not included specifically in that law. But from the beginning in 2007, that law was viewed as including transgender students. And since Robert mentioned our his Governor Brown, I'll mention our Governor Brown. At that time, she was a senator in the Oregon legislature and one of the chief sponsors of this anti-discrimination bill.
Ah, okay. And of course, is bisexual herself, or has been in her life. Within the backdrop of what had gone before, Robert Oakes in California, did the federal guidance from the Obama administration really suggest that there was anything more that California could or should be doing, or was California already doing all that was proposed?
Well, we don't try not to brag too much down here, but we felt we were ahead of the curve. This is a state that moves forward, not back. So we and the superintendent were gratified to see President Obama take that action. We think it sent a strong message to the rest of the country that, once again, all students should be safe at school. California also has fairly extensive guidelines on our California Department of Education website for school districts. If you go to cde.ca.gov, just type in transgender and it'll all pop up. So we, as Oregon has done, want to walk people through the process of how to help these kids at individual school sites. So to your question, you know, it was just, once again, very disappointing to see President Trump take this action. But in California, we are moving ahead.
So, Cindy Hunt, in Oregon, it seems like Oregon was already doing everything that would have been in the Obama guidance.
That's correct. However, you know, more and more students are coming out as transgender and younger. And so what we were finding is even though many of these laws had been in place for a while, school districts hadn't had to, you know, face these issues. And so, you know, the federal government under the Obama administration had kind of shown a bright light on these topics. So I think that's one of the many reasons that students were coming out earlier. But in Oregon, many of our districts already had existing policies before the Obama administration's actions. So while we, too, were disappointed, you know, by the Trump administration's decision to rescind the guidance, we feel pretty confident that in Oregon, we still have strong state laws.
We're talking about transgender students in schools in both of our states. Cindy Hunt is the Government and Legal Affairs Manager at the Oregon Department of Education. Robert Oakes is a spokesperson for the California Department of Education. You are welcome to join the conversation here on the Jefferson Exchange. You may have many questions yourself about how schools handle and deal with, address, accommodate transgender students. 800-838-3760 to join us by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. Looking at Oregon's advice to districts, we talked about the terminology section. There are 15 different things in there, from assigned sex to transsexual, which is now considered an outdated term. How hard is it, Cindy, for the Oregon Department, or for, I guess, and this will go for both of you, for either Department of Education, to keep up with the changes in meeting the needs of transgender students and the way they even talk about those needs? Cindy?
Yeah, we worked with advocacy organizations in Oregon to make sure that we had the most current terminology and also decided to define some of the terminology like, for example, transsexual that some individuals might have heard or associated with the transgender community and kind of take it head on and talk about how that is now an archaic term. Because one of the questions we were getting from our school districts was, you know, I don't want to use the wrong terms. I want to make the students feel welcome. And so I need some education myself. And so that's why we define the terms. As far as keeping up, it's one of the things that we try to monitor, you know, and we are closely working with many of our advocacy organizations as well as our Oregon School Boards Association so that we know the kinds of questions and issues that are coming up and so that we can give the best guidance to our districts and students and parents.
And Robert, in California, how do you keep up with the terminology and the issues?
Well, it's a great approach in Oregon, and we try to mirror that here in California. Once again, Superintendent Torlakson was a classroom teacher, and his favorite saying is, together, everyone achieves more. Team, T-E-A-M. So we've done extensive outreach to the LGBT community. We've tried to draw in different groups so we are current, that we're using the right terms. this is an incredibly diverse state. We have more than 6.2 million students, and we are constantly updating our standards, our frameworks, our terminology to make sure that we're current so everyone feels welcome. Everyone is under the big old tent down here that, once again, keeps students safe at school.
The issue of transgender students and facilities, or transgender people and facilities, it goes more broadly than schools, ends up in the news so much, and certainly ends up being the subject of legislation on a fairly regular basis, that a person could get the idea that gender is a constant topic of discussion in schools. Robert, is that the case?
Not at all. These cases are actually somewhat rare. Anecdotally, I had our staff check. The Department of Education here is responsible for receiving any discrimination complaints that school districts get based on these laws, and we don't have any on transgender students, which essentially means the districts take care of it. So, yeah, it gets a lot of attention, but I just think, once again, you know, we as a society have moved forward. Both our states are, once again, have all these extensive protections. I think it's just a reflection on how far we've come. I was joking with someone here at work. So in 1981, I'll date myself as a freshman at Lewis and Clark College in Portland, I had a co-ed floor. And the guy next to me said, how are we going to share a restroom with girls? I said, I have four sisters. I'm lucky to get in there. Let's go to school. So the message is here, let's go to school. Let's help students succeed.
So California just mentioned that no discrimination complaints reaching the Department of Education there. I assume that system would be similar in Oregon, Cindy Hunt. And do you have any complaints that arise from people feeling they've been discriminated against for gender reasons?
Right, exactly. We, too, have a complaint system that comes to the Oregon Department of Education. And we also have not received any formal complaints based on a student's transgender status. We also have not received any formal complaints based on a student's sexual orientation status since 2007. That's not to say that we don't get calls asking for guidance or just with questions about a student's rights or, you know, what a school district should be doing, you know, in response to a student. But, you know, I would agree with Robert that, you know, many school districts are handling these situations really well. And when that happens, it often does not make the press. You know, it's just kids going to school and getting an education. And so, you know, I think that sometimes the attention in the press is really great because it makes people aware, you know, and educated. But other times, you know, I think that it creates an image that, you know, every student or every school is kind of facing this, and it's always an issue, and it's always hard and everything. But that's not necessarily the case.
Precisely why I asked the question, because days when the sun shines and the rivers flow normally and all that stuff doesn't get reported in the news outside of the weather segment. But when things are different, that's when things get reported, and that's what I'm driving at here. So you're not hearing really much from the local districts. And you mentioned that nobody's made a formal complaint. I wonder if there's any sort of informational level of things, though, you get, Cindy. I mean, you mentioned that school districts do call the Oregon Department of Education with questions and make requests for, you know, how do we handle things. But on that basis, I mean, are you getting even much of that?
Yeah, so one thing I can say in the last week, since the federal government did their action, we did have a couple of districts call and say, okay, how does that impact the guidance that you gave last May? Because the districts that are calling, they're not lawyers necessarily, and they weren't as aware that, you know, the federal government could take their action, but we still had the state law. And then once we reminded them, you know, that there's all of these state laws in place, they're like, oh, okay, we get it. And so we are getting those kinds of calls. But in Oregon, you know, as soon as the guidance was issued, we put out some, you know, press releases and we put out some information so that everyone hopefully would know that we still had these state laws in place. So once that happened, then the number of calls went down because people started getting the message.
You mentioned that there are, I mean, obviously more cases of transgender students over time and younger. I mean, I would start with the assumption that this is more of a high school issue, but I could be wrong. Where do you see this more often, Cindy?
Yeah, that was one of the things we were seeing, is that students who are transgender were definitely coming out earlier and earlier. So we started getting calls from middle schools, for example, that had never had a known trans or an out transgender student. And so they were starting to face these topics. But we also have examples of students coming out actually before school even starts, so before age 5. And so this is an issue that, you know, elementary schools, middle schools, and high schools could be facing.
I know there's a, I suspect there's a reluctance to keep counts, but I mean, does either state keep a track of the numbers of cases of transgender students asking for the treatment that is due them under law? And then we'll start again with Oregon, with Cindy.
Yeah, we do not keep track.
Mm-hmm. California, Robert?
No, we don't. That wasn't part of the mandate down here. Mm-hmm. Now, once again, like Cindy mentioned, though, I want to emphasize that we've tried to do extensive outreach and best practices for our school districts. You know, California is a local control state. The individual school districts pretty much run the show, but we want to help them. I did ask for examples when I started getting some calls after the Obama action last year, and there's a little town called Placerville. It's east of the state capitol here in Sacramento, where a principal from an elementary school called me, and they had a second grader who his parents came forward and said this was the issue. And the immediate response wasn't, what do we do about it? It's, what is the best way to help this kid? So you put a team together. They were able to find a single stall restroom in the gym the student was able to use. So once again, we're here to help. And schools, they're pretty good at teaching kids, and this is something they fit into their model to help students.
We're talking about transgender students in schools in light of the recent events where the Trump administration rescinded the guidance that was put out by the Trump administration instructing public schools across the country how they could deal with transgender students. You can join the conversation on the exchange as we talk more with Robert Oakes from the California Department of Education and Cindy Hunt from the Oregon Department of Education. 800-838-3760, the phone number, email address jx@jeffnet.org. And I wonder if either of you are aware of the departments getting any resistance from school districts that either claim there are no transgender issues or they have no desire to comply with laws or guidelines. I would think that would be rare.
This is Robert. No, we haven't heard that. It would be unfortunate if someone took that position. And once again, I think this is a reflection of how much society, thankfully, has changed. You know, when this bill came through the legislature, I was working as the legislative director for the chair of the Senate Education Committee, and we had group after group come in to testify in support, and that included the California School Boards Association, which represents more than 1,000 individual school districts down here, Teachers Association. It just went on, and there were a couple of groups that came in and said, well, you know, this is not fair. Districts need to figure this out on their own, but they were a minority voice in the process. So, you know, we've moved ahead as a society, and we've moved ahead as a state.
Cindy Hunt, any resistance from school districts that don't particularly like having to do this?
Yeah, you know, there are some school districts who have asked questions, some individual school board members. One piece of resistance has come for some of the school boards with their communities, as communities become aware that they have their perhaps first out transgender student. And so one of the things that we put in the guidance because of that, we had a case in Oregon where there were community members who had testified in front of a school board who had threatened physical violence against a student. And so one of the things that we did in our guidance is remind people that in Oregon, we have a mandatory child abuse prevention law, mandatory reporter law. And what that says is that me as an attorney, teachers, school employees, if they hear a legitimate threat of violence against a student, they are obligated to report that to law enforcement and to human services. And so that was one of the reasons we put that in our guidance, is to remind folks of this, is that, you know, when you're sitting there and getting public testimony and some of it becomes, you know, these threats, and it's obviously very unfortunate that people, you know, will say those things or go to that length, you know, you also have an obligation, and you have an obligation to keep the students safe. And that was one of the primary reasons for our mandatory reporter law that was adopted so long ago in Oregon.
So we're talking about mandatory reporting from a school board meeting potentially in a case like that?
Yeah. So, for example, if the superintendent, who is a school employee, is sitting there and there is a community member who has threatened the student and they, you know, this is seen as a legitimate threat, perhaps they know the student's name, which school they attend, that kind of thing, and it's a threat of violence, yes, that superintendent or that teacher or any attorney or various other licensed professionals in Oregon have an obligation to report that to law enforcement as a threat of child abuse, and then law enforcement can investigate. We also, though, in our guidance said in that circumstance, you should work with the student and the student's parents to ensure the safety of the student.
You know, the thing that happens when we talk about transgender issues in America is it always, always, and I point again to Superintendent Torlakson in California's statement last week mentions restrooms and locker rooms in the very first paragraph, which is what it always seems to come back to. So the question that gets asked by opponents of accommodations for transgender people is, what stops a student of one gender from declaring themselves transgender just to hang in the locker room of the other gender? That's usually the scenario that gets painted there. Robert Oakes, how answer that?
Well, that's a red herring. Quite honestly, you know, that's an argument we're not going to engage in California. The fact of the matter is the law is the law, and as Cindy said, you know, there are extensive protections for all students. In California, there's almost 50 categories of school employees, from custodian to principal, who are mandated reporters as well. If there's any threats against students, it must be reported to law enforcement, and if you don't do it, you're subject to prosecution. So we want to keep kids safe, and this whole argument of people lurking in restrooms, quite honestly, we're not going to engage in that. It's a false argument, and we're not going to give any credence to people who won't acknowledge that California passed this law 4 years ago. So we moved ahead.
Cindy Hunt, same question?
Yeah, I would agree it's a red herring. I mean, districts maintain the ability to control their own facilities. Okay, they must keep within the state and federal, you know, rights of all students. But they do, you know, whether if a student is being harassed or bullied within a restroom facility, on a playground, within a classroom, they still have an ability to address those situations. But this notion, you know, that it's all about bathrooms is definitely a red herring. And in our guidance, we cover it, but it's a little more buried because of that, because of the host of other issues that come up in these circumstances, like harassment and bullying and the rights of students to get a free and appropriate public education.
Okay. Much to be said, and both states in pretty good shape already because protections are in place from state laws from years ago. Cindy Hunt is with the Oregon Department of Education. Robert Oakes with the California Department of Education. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you,
Jeff.